You're listening to The Record on KUOW with Ross Reynolds. I'm Steve Scherr. It's been 3 years and 6 days since Matt Adler killed himself. He was a high-functioning corporate attorney, a father of two, but when the economy took a downturn, so did Matt's mental health. He took a leave of absence from work, but his depression continued to worsen. In 2011, Matt took his own life. His widow, Jennifer Stuber, is still grieving, but she has since dedicated her life to changing the stigma around mental illness and improving suicide prevention services. Mental health professionals now receive suicide prevention training because of a bill she helped pass. It's called the Matt Adler Act. Tomorrow, she's heading back to Olympia to garner support for new legislation that would mandate suicide awareness training for all primary care providers. I had the chance to sit down with Jennifer Stuber about her work and her hopes. She told me that a major reason why these measures are necessary connects directly to her husband's own struggles dealing with his depression and thoughts of suicide. The stigma around mental health issues prevented him from talking openly about it.
You know, I remember him coming home one day and say, after the day that he took the leave of absence from work, and saying to me, well, you know, who wants a lawyer with a broken brain?
A broken brain.
A broken brain.
He felt he had a broken brain.
And I said, well, first off, have you even told anybody at your job that this is why you're taking the leave? And he said, well, no, but, you know, I'm not in a hospital. I'm not walking around, you know, with any kind of physical disability. So they must know. And, you know, I really challenged him on that. I actually think in hindsight, I would have been better to have validated his feelings and said,
how do you mean?
Said, you know, it is really tough to be walking around with the challenges that you're having. And I know that society doesn't look at mental illness in the same way, but that we need to change that is really what we need to do. But that was, at that point, that wasn't really the message. He needed a message of support, and not so much saying like, oh, challenge the stigma. I think he really needed a message of support. And then I do think we need to challenge the stigma.
What does the message of support sound like in your mind?
I think for me, that message of support is around a validation of the pain and the desperation that he was feeling, and encouraging him, which I was, but really trying to say to him, like, look, I will stand by you through all of this. This is a really rough journey you're on. We're in it together. You've got my full attention, despite the fact that I've got two small children and I'm working full time. You've got my full attention, and I'm here for you no matter what. And I think I was very much supporting him, and I loved my husband through it all. But I think people are, when someone was struggling with a mental health issue, it can be very challenging on family members. And you know, for example, my husband was completely checked out, really. He was isolating himself within our family. He wasn't going to work. He wasn't interacting with our two young children. I was the one getting up every night for breastfeeding and all these things. And, you know, it was frustrating. And I think if I had a sense of the depth of his pain, and if I knew about his suicidal intent, which the mental health professionals treating him knew about, if I knew about that, I think I would have changed my orientation towards him and tried to figure out how to be more compassionate in his pain.
You never imagined he would take his own life.
Absolutely not. This is really hard for a family member. And I think this is why the mental health professionals and the health professionals, not just mental health professionals, all healthcare providers who are working with suicidal individuals have to be more proactive about reaching out to family. We can very often be the most proactively helpful and helping and keeping that person safe, but we need to understand what's going on. And that denial factor is so huge. This is somebody I'd known since I was 19 years old. He was my best friend. From all external perspectives, he had everything in the world to live for, right? Great career, great family. And so the idea that he could actually end his life was quite foreign to me. And I think I needed somebody to shake me and wake me up.
Jennifer Stuber is assistant professor at the University of Washington School of Social Work. After losing her husband to suicide in 2011, she helped pass the Matt Adler Suicide Assessment, Treatment, and Management Act. And that's what you're talking about, that first step, somebody to shake you, somebody to wake you up. Mental health professionals who backed away from the statements he made to them. He even had rehearsed a suicide and told them that.
Yes, exactly. And that was the time. There were actually many warning signs that I learned from reading his medical records. What really needed to happen was when someone is in that kind of dark place, you really have to focus on that suicidal intent, and you really have to take it seriously. It has to become the first priority. And so there has to be an assessment of what that looks like. And then you have to develop a treatment plan that matches what that risk is for someone's. This is what I now understand, you know, again, from 3 years later. And that did not happen with him. It was not, his suicidal intent was not taken seriously.
Where were they?
Where were the mental health professionals? They were, I think, covering their own butts, frankly, trying to cover their own butts. I think that they were absolutely really very, very afraid. They weren't collaborating well together. And they were just basically, and sadly, there are many, many, I want to preface this by saying there are many, many wonderful mental health professionals who I think do the right thing around people who are suicidal. But I also think there are many, many mental health professionals who don't get it, that this is their role and responsibility to address suicidal individuals and to follow up with them, do the assessments, do the safety plans, engage in treatment and not just pass the buck, send them off to the emergency room or send them off to another provider who they think can do it better. They really have to own this as a role and a responsibility.
So is this a fear of covering your butt, as you said, or is there something deeper? It is a dark space to look down. Even mental health professionals have that fear?
You know, to lose a client to suicide or a patient to suicide is one of the most profoundly negative things you can have happen in your career. I mean, it really, nobody wants to have that happen. And in fact, I'm quite certain that the mental health professionals treating my late husband, it was a very bad, bad incident for them.
You said that sometimes, like he said, that he was a burden and that he wanted to end the pain, but also not be a burden. And I heard, and then spare the family that pain. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's exactly not what happens.
Literally, my husband wrote that in his note to me, that he felt me and Jake, his 5-year-old son, and his 1-year-old daughter would be better off without him. So, of course, he could not be further off from the mark on that. And God, I wish he knew that. But that was really a false impression that he had in his mind, and he couldn't have possibly have anticipated the negative consequences that we still live with on a day-to-day basis because of his death.
Why is that? What's happening in his mind that he can't see the pain that it would cause?
Well, I think in his case he felt so worthless.
You talked about this statistic that I didn't know about. You're living with it, but it's also something that's driving this effort at legislation, which is that if somebody in a family dies by suicide, children of those suicides, their risk is greater?
Absolutely. Well, this is also why it's very important to look at suicide across the lifespan. So statistically, my children are now at higher risk for a death by suicide themselves personally, which is obviously a very scary thought for me as a parent. And so but I think we don't exactly know why there is that risk, that why there are, you know, clusters of suicides within families. I think that a lot of that, though, just from seeing from my own family situation, has to do with how do you actually address this very unique and awful kind of grief and loss? Like, how do you take that on? You know, because death by suicide has incredibly bad ripple effects into a community. It's a very complicated, it's traumatic death, typically very premature, very unexpected, and often family members struggle for the rest of their lives with guilt and unanswered questions. And I think for me, I have healed from my husband's suicide because I have really faced it head on. What role maybe could I have done better? What are the lessons I could have learned? Trying to understand everything I could about his death and what we can do better as a society. But I think for a lot of people, they don't have that benefit. They often, like I'm friends with so many people who've lost someone to suicide, and the depth of their pain and anguish just really blows me away, in the sense that, you know, the people often will hide, you know, the fact that their loved one died by suicide. They won't talk about it with anybody. They will isolate themselves. They will feel incredible guilt, incredible shame. And so I think that has a lot to do with why that suicide persists within families.
When you said you faced it head on, what does that mean? I mean, what did you do?
I stood up a week after my husband's death and gave a eulogy to him where I acknowledged very openly and honestly what had happened to him. And I talked about the pain that he was in. And I personally have, you know, really made it, I think it's turned into a life mission here to really try to address the problem head on so that other people are spared the grief and pain that my family endured.
Jennifer Stuber helped found Forefront Innovations in Suicide Prevention. So here's a seed. These are slightly older statistics, but not that old. CDC reports some 230,000 adults in Washington had considered suicide in the past 12 months. This is 2011. It's 1 in 20 adults. 36,000 Washingtonians make a suicide attempt each year. This Spokane psychologist was asked some questions about this. He asked a medical group, how many patients had considered suicide, he asked them. So he was asking the medicine group, how many of your patients had committed suicide? And none was the answer. And then he said, how many were treated for major depression? 1,500. Why this disconnect among mental health and doctors?
So a lot of this bill is about the fact that doctors and nurses don't even know what they don't know. I hear this argument all the time. I actually heard in one of the hearings in the legislature, you know, over this bill, I had to smile because I couldn't believe it was coming out of a legislator's mouth. He said, I'm asking for an amendment to this bill to exempt doctors and nurses from it. And he said, I went home and asked my primary care doctor what he thought. Did he think he needed training in suicide assessment and suicide prevention? And he says, well, no, because I don't deal with that. I just refer that person out if I think that there might be a concern there. And that's exactly the point, is that people have to recognize that they have a role and a responsibility on this issue. And primary care is the front line of this issue. We know that the veterans that are coming home are not going, most of them are actually not going to seek treatment within the VA system. They're going to be seeking treatment from their primary care doctors out in their communities. We know that middle-aged white men, one of the main places where you're going to connect with them is through their primary care provider. They'll go in for their prostate exam. So this is why it's really, really important that we engage this broader health professional community.
Why don't clinicians know they're suicidal, he said, because they don't ask. And they're worried that asking the question will put ideas into their head.
A huge myth.
That was my question. So asking is helpful and healthy.
Asking validates, helpful and healthy, and it validates that person's pain and experience. Talking to people about their suicidal ideation in an open way, in a supportive way, and letting them know that there's a lot of people who have survived this, that there is hope. Treatment isn't always easy. It doesn't come right away often. People get better instantly. That's can sometimes happen, but it sometimes takes a while, but you got to stay at it. And to provide that support to people to stay at it.
How has this influenced the suicide, but also how you decided to face it head on? How has that shaped the way you talk to your growing children?
Well, I think they're getting a little bit tired of this subject, actually. But especially.
But they probably had questions as they got older.
So I will tell you, when we went to the bill signing with the governor, Greg Warr, at the time in 2012, my son, who was then 6 years old at the time, could not have been more proud. And to this day, he's really proud of the work that he knows his mom to be doing. And I know that he considers himself a big part of it. And he is. He frankly sacrifices a lot for me to do this work, and my daughter as well. And so one of the things that I think has been so inspiring is watching them cope with this. And actually, they take it head on. They talk about it very openly in their class. Sometimes that raises some eyebrows, but that's what we need to be doing.
Jennifer Stuber helped found Forefront, an agency that brings suicide prevention experts together with the hope of helping those dealing with suicidal tendencies. We have information about the Lobby Day in Olympia tomorrow at our website. If you're feeling suicidal, call now for help. The telephone number for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-8255, 1-800-273-8255. This is The Record.